Lily here.
Sabrina here.
And the day we're recording this on June 6th is in the middle of everything that is happening in America, not just the pandemic, but we've said it on Twitter and we want to say it here on the podcast in case anyone has any doubts. We support Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. In case you had any doubts, we will not tolerate any listeners who don't agree with those things. And we support the protests that are happening and the things that they stand for.
Yeah, exactly what Lily said. I have nothing to add other than I don't understand how you don't understand the Black Lives Matter movement, but okay.
Anyways, we just wanted to say that because this is a very... Talking about fangirl things and media things seems very frivolous in a moment like this. But we... That is what we do. And we are going to keep making what we do, but we also are going to keep supporting Black Lives Matter in the way that we can. We will include links if you want to do so as well.
Yeah, please, if you have the means, donate. If you can, like, resources, sign petitions, whatever you can to help support the movement.
And in a total tone shift, here's the theme song.
Hi, I'm Sabrina Petrofessa.
And I'm Lily Rugo.
And this is Earth's Mightiest Fangirls.
Yay.
This always happens. I always think that you're going to, like, introduce it and then you don't.
Yeah, no. I don't know why I never do.
But anyway, we are talking about Avatar Book 1 today.
Yay. Prepare yourselves for our Avatar The Last Airbender series. Like our X-Men yes. 1, like our, you know, other various TV show ones. We're going to break down each season.
Yes. So we're doing season one this week, and then in 2 weeks, it's going to be season two, and then 2 weeks after that is going to be season three.
Yeah.
We're breaking it up a little bit, but also, like, we're trying to get through because we love this show so much.
We love the show so much. It's going to be very hard to talk about. And I was going to say it's going to be very hard about each season on its own because we just want to talk about all of it.
Yeah. But we're going to stick to it. This week is just season one, book one, Water. And truly, truly... What an incredible season of television.
Yeah, I haven't sat down and watched it end to end, but because it's on Netflix, that's what sparked this topic of us finally getting to Avatar. But I've been going through different random episodes, and oh my god, the season was so good. They cover so many things, and it's, you know, arguably people think that season one is the weak season, but it's got so much good stuff in it, you know?
Well, I think why people think season one is the weak season is because it's not, like, when you think about Avatar, you think about certain characters and certain, like, dynamics that involve those characters who have not showed up yet in season one. Mm-hmm, so it's kind of like, well, how do you have Avatar without those characters? But, you know, you have to build up these relationships first, and I think the build up to getting to... Zuko's foils and any addition to the gang after this is, like, important, you know?
Yeah, we also... This really struck me again when I was watching throughout the week and stuff. You kind of forget when you grow up with a show that it's kids. Like, this started out as a children's show and these characters are kids. So I was rewatching it this week. I was like, oh, yeah. Aang is really annoying, but he's also 12. Like, every 12-year-old kid is annoying situation. So I think that's one of the reasons why people don't like book one as much is because this is the most immature we see these characters right now. It's just, that's where they're at.
Yeah, like, all of them. All of them are pretty immature in this first season.
But that's where they're at. It's where they are in the story. It's where they are as, like, children and teenagers. Yeah. But do we have to explain the plot? Do we have to explain... That's my job. I go through the Wikipedia page. Here I go.
Go through the Wikipedia page with the facts and I do the plot. But, fun fact, the guy who voices Aang is from my hometown.
Oh, wow.
I feel like growing up, we all, like, at least in Stanford, we were all like, oh my god, Aang is from Stanford. Aang is from Stanford. Aang is from Stanford. Like, we would always say that. And then there was, like, one kid I knew who did Little League with him.
Right, because he was cast to his age, right? Like, he was a kid. Yeah.
And, like, so, I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before. We have met Dante Bosco.
Yeah.
Through college from the organization that Lily was a part of slash ran called Asia.
Our college really liked acronyms. It was the Asian Student Union. We just called ourselves Asia for reasons.
But he came to the school and, like, talked to us and whatever, and then there was a little meet and greet after, and, like, because Lily's the real MVP, like, I went last so that we could have extra time with him. And I thoroughly embarrassed myself by saying, oh, yeah, I think he's, like, younger than us, actually. And Dante Bosco was like, no. But he's only, like, a couple years older than us. He's not much older than us.
Wow.
And when I think about it in my head, I just always perceive that actor as younger because I perceive him as Aang.
There was someone, I don't remember who, but, like, this is very, like, through the grapevine connection, but in our freshman year, we were all put into a Facebook group together, and we did, like, little, like, intro posts, and someone introduced themselves as saying as they were a voice actor on Avatar. And through the very strange rumor mill that is social media, it got around that the voice actress of Toph was in our graduating class at Emerson.
No.
It was not. But I heard, like, through many things, I remember hearing, like, oh, did you hear Toph is one somewhere, like, in our grad year? And I was like, what? And then I fact-checked it, and that's not. But, yeah.
Can you even imagine? Like, if anything, they're a voice actor and some, like, random person, like... But anyway, that was my fun fact and also the slightly embarrassing moment I had with Dante Bosco that he doesn't remember, but I still think about it sometimes.
It's okay. You made it onto Dante Bosco's Instagram.
I am on his Instagram. Like, if you go far enough back on his Instagram to when this happened in 2018, I'm there.
Nice.
We posed like we were redirecting lightning. I think that's why he put me in it.
Oh, I thought you did the dragon dance.
No, I mean, I guess it kind of looks like that too, but I was like, can we pose like we're, I asked if we can pose redirecting lightning.
Oh, okay.
And so we did like the meh with our hands above our heads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
I also got a great video with him.
Chill dude, by the way. I do endorse Dante Bosco as a person and his career.
He's a cool guy. But anyway, when did this first season of Avatar come out, Lily?
This series is going to be all over the place because I have so many. We've spent, anyways, when I tell you how, when this show came out, we've spent like, you know, over a decade of our life invested and in thinking about this. So Avatar The Last Airbender aired on Nickelodeon from February 21st, 2005 to July 19th, 2008.
Okay. That, yeah. 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
A season a year. That makes sense. You know, season one came out in 2005. I'm assuming it was, like, one of those, like, week-to-week shows. Definitely. So season one is basically Katara and Sokka are two people who are two kids, two teenagers, who live in the Southern Water Tribe, and they're out fishing, and then they discover the Avatar, who bends all four elements. He can bend water, fire, earth, and air. And the reason why it's called The Last Airbender, which if you're listening to this, you probably know because this is an iconic show. And if you haven't watched it, what's wrong with you? Go watch it. Is because he was born into the Air Nomad Nation and they're all gone now because the Fire Nation committed genocide.
But again, like Sabrina said, if you're not familiar with the show, just look at the intro. Everything you need to know. I love good show intro. And everything you need to know about backstory, world building, all of it, right there. Just clean, cut, done, story time. So yeah, good.
Which is incredible because you're not bogged down in the actual show with all of that. And to a certain extent, you get some of that because Aang has been trapped in an iceberg for 100 years and missed the entirety of the war, which is incredible. But anyway, so you get some of, you learn what happens from with the Fire Nation and the army and all of that through Aang's innocence.
Right. Because
and naivete.
Because the first episode called Boy in the Iceberg, when he comes out of the iceberg, he's 12, right?
Yes.
So it goes, Aang is 12, Katara is 14, Sokka's 15.
Yeah. I've never really thought about how old Katara and Sokka are because it's never explicitly stated.
That makes sense. But, like, roughly those age areas, you know. So the first book is he only is the master of one element at that point in time for reasons that they get into. So he, first book is water. he's got to go become the master of waterbending, and that's the journey of this book. And also kind of really digging into what he's missed in the past 100 years, what it, this world in the middle of war, a brutal, awful war, is now what it is now versus what he used to know, which was peace times 100 years ago.
So here's the thing with Avatar. It's one of those shows where, and it's also one of these things where the two of us can just sit here and be like, it's so good, and have nothing else to say, because it really is just so good. Like, it's a one of the few pieces of media I think are perfect.
For me, there's very many reasons, but if I had to just choose one thing that made it, that I think is the reason it is so good, is its writing. I think Avatar is just superbly written, top down, just like end to end.
Yeah. And I think what makes this show so different, and what people, at least when we were growing up watching this, and again, thinking about 2005 and how, like, we were in legitimately in elementary school when this show was coming out. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we probably all latched onto it so much is that it was episodic in that it had a through line for the whole show. There was a whole storyline happening throughout the whole thing, and it wasn't like SpongeBob where they're just getting into antics every episode and it's completely separate of itself. Like, you don't need to watch 100 episodes of SpongeBob to understand what's going on, you know? If you jump into Avatar in the middle of season 2, you might be a little confused. So I think that's what made it so different, because I think for a lot of us, it was the first time we were introduced to a show where we kind of had to pay attention to what was happening.
It was like a book, which was what they were going for. Book, seasons, chapters, so on, so forth.
Yeah, I just really like that about it, is that it probably was one of the first pieces of media that I consumed that had a consistent through line where I had to remember what happened before that episode to know what was going on, you know?
I think a large part of that is because, again, children's show, our target audience, I can't math. We were like, what, 10? We were around Aang's age when Avatar aired, like us two. Yeah. But again, unlike all the other kids' media that we were seeing in the States, at least, it was fun and wild and random, but Avatar was the first show that I felt like took its audience seriously, of like, we're going to take you on a story like anything else that you've been reading, or any other sort of like novel length journey, and we're not going to condescend. We're going to really get into some heavy, heavy stuff. Like, book one goes there in a lot of different ways.
It doesn't play a play around.
Yeah. And at no point does it condescend to children in a way that feels just like, isn't it sad when your family's dead? And it was just like, no, this is Aang processing a genocide.
No, there are the words like death and kill and murder, like, present themselves in this show often. It's not explicitly shown ever, but like, the topics of conversation aren't shied away from. When like the third episode of the first season is Aang taking Katara and Sokka to his home and being like, no, someone survived. There's, like, no way. The air nomads were tricky like that. There's no way they're all gone. And being presented with the fact that, yes, they're all gone, and specifically finding the skeleton of his father figure, basically. So you are seeing the tolls of war and genocide in this story, and you're seeing how that's impacting Aang specifically.
And I also really appreciate, so to absolutely nobody's surprise, if you're a long-time listener, first-time listener, I'm a Zuko bitch. I can't. I have a signed Zuko poster by Dante Bosco hanging in my house. It's the first thing you see when you open the door. Anyways.
I've got my Dante Bosco posters in here somewhere that he signed. By the way, he signs things by just saying honor, like, he writes honor and then he signs his name.
So I think they play a really good dual side, because I don't think we mentioned him yet, but Zuko is the antagonist of book one. He is the son of the Fire Lord Fire Lord's the one in charge of the war, so on and so forth. He is the exiled son. He is peak angsty boy. He, which again, they go really into family abuse and like monarchy, hierarchical powers and things like that, because Zuko is the banished, disgraced son of the Fire Lord.
Yeah.
And
is it season one that we find out why? I can't remember.
It's late. It's in the second half, but there's one episode where you find out Aang's backstory, and it's, they do a lot. They do it's parallels between Aang and Zuko. But they really get into not just the bad side of the Fire Nation, but like where Zuko at least comes from and why he is driven the way he is. And again, yeah, they don't shy away from just like what it means to do things in the name of a greater cause that you believe in, even if they're not great things.
Yeah.
And it's towards the end of just, like, you kind of start... I'm specifically talking about the Blue Spirit episode. I could do a whole hour solo on this episode, but just, like, the gray in-betweens of people in the middle of a terrible situation.
I mean, so since Avatar got released on Netflix in America, because it was on Netflix in other countries. Like, it was on Netflix in Thailand, and I watched it, like, 3 times while I was over there. So I was so excited to have access to it.
Nickelodeon held out for a really long time, because Avatar was one of the first shows that was released when Netflix went to a streaming platform. I remember watching it on my Wii. Like, the Netflix Wii app was how I rewatched Avatar. And then it disappeared for at least, like, a decade.
Weird. But since the resurgence, there's been a resurgence of this on social media. People have been tweeting about, posting about Avatar so much. And one of the things that I saw get brought up was how Avatar teaches you that just because there is a, like a superpower, like a country that is a superpower, in this case it's the Fire Nation, doesn't mean that the average citizen is a horrible person. And you see that these people in the Fire Nation are indoctrinated into the, like, propaganda of the Fire Nation throughout the series. And in season one, you see it as well a little bit. And that, like, through Zuko's story and Iroh's story, you can learn and figure out, like, you can open your eyes to what's going wrong in, like, the country that you are a part of and be aware of that and do something about it, you know?
Also, what I noticed throughout this season is because Avatar is very journey-based, Aang has to travel to locations and Zuko is following him. A lot of what Zuko and Iroh see is they're out in the world and they're interacting with what people who they think are the enemy are their subjects. And Aang is seeing the side of people who are oppressed by a supremacy, if you will. So what you see...
Listen, we're not being subtle today. We're not being subtle. Just know that we lay on a certain side of a certain subject and it is not with the oppressor.
Yeah. And you don't interact because where Aang is going. In the first book, you don't really see too much of the Fire Nation. You think there's like one episode where you do. And it's not so much of them, they buy into the propaganda of the Fire Nation, but more than that, they're complacent. They're happy. And they don't realize the suffering that their nation is causing internationally.
Yeah. I think one of the things about that specifically, though, is that you don't really see everyday Fire Nation citizens outside of the Fire Nation.
On the
journey that Aang takes from the South Pole to the North Pole. By the way, I've been, as I said in a previous episode, been watching this with my nephew, and he was like, Zia, he calls me Zia because that's Italian for aunt. Cute. Why does it take them so long to get to the North Pole if that's where they need to go? And I was like, James, you have to think about it this way. They're going from all the way to the bottom of the world to all the way to the top of the world.
On a flying animal. They need brakes.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to comprehend that Appa flies. He just says Appa floats.
Oh, that's cute.
He's like, yeah, because I'll be like, Appa flies. And he goes, he floats, Zia. Like, he's too
funny. How old is your nephew again, watching this?
He's 5.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, and apparently he only watches it with me. Like, at a certain point he was watching it on his own, but then now it's like if he starts watching it, he'll call me, or I guess I have to egg him on to watch it now. Because he's in season two, and he needs to keep going. That's all I have to say.
So kind of what we were talking about earlier about how this show doesn't condescend, but Five is younger than we were when we were watching it. How much is he getting? How much is he comprehending?
He gets it, kind of. One of the things I thought was funny is that I was talking to him about the Fire Nation, and I was like, I tweeted this, actually. I was like, the Fire Nation is kind of like stormtroopers in Star Wars, because he knows Star Wars. And I was like, and stormtroopers are the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he also knows, the last three movies. He knows that Finn used to be a stormtrooper and is now a good guy. Mm-hmm, and so he tells me, but Zia, remember, one of the stormtroopers became good. And so he's making those connections a little bit. And I was like, just you wait. So he's getting it. Like, definitely he forgets things. And it took him a long time to remember the characters' names. And definitely when I'm watching with him, he asks a lot of questions. He's like, but, like, why is he trying to go to that place? And, like, if, like, Aang is meditating, he immediately thinks that, like, Aang is trying to, is like, seeing the comet that Roku showed him.
Oh, right.
And, like, oh, my God, the amount of time I spent talking to him about the spirit world.
Yeah.
Like,
that
didn't make sense to him, really. It wasn't clicking. So it was kind of difficult to explain that to him. And I was like, and I was coddling him at a certain point. And I was like, wait, this show is not coddling you and you're watching it. I shouldn't be coddling you. Because I was like talking about the spirit world. And I said, Aang can go into the spirit world, but like nobody else can.
Right.
And he said, why? And I said, because Aang is the only one who can come back alive. I was like, normally you only go to the spirit world if you die, but Aang can be in the spirit world and the normal world.
Right.
And so, like, it was the episode with the panda spirit and the tree spirit. So that's where he was, like, really asking me, because we've been watching it together, like, over FaceTime. Like, I'll put it on my computer and he has it on the TV and I, like, make sure that we're at the same, like, part.
Oh, yeah.
And Aang comes back as, like, a spirit to Katara and... He's like, why can't she see him? And I was like, because he's a spirit right now. What do you mean a spirit? He's in the spirit world. What's the spirit world? The spirit world is like where people like go when they die. And I was like, yeah, so basically he's a ghost right now.
Right.
And then he wasn't understanding, okay, if the spirit world is different from the real world, why is he in the real world?
Okay, yeah.
It was that kind of thing. So he's getting it, and he's also not getting it. But also, I feel like when I watched it, even at 8 years old, I wasn't getting it, you know?
Mm-hmm, definitely. I didn't realize how heavy it was.
Yeah.
That's definitely just come from, like, again, nearly 2 decades of rewatching this thing.
Yes. My God, what was my point in the first, before I even brought up, I brought up James, and the whole thing got derailed.
Oh, wait, yeah, no, I have no idea.
But, I get, like, okay, speaking of season one in general and, like, meeting characters and whatever, and what I think is great about Zuko and meeting Zuko specifically is that when you see him, you kind of do see him as, like, an angry child. Mm-hmm. He is angry, and he is searching for something, and... specifically, he's searching for the Avatar. You can see, like, good and bad qualities in him within that first episode. You see that he's angry, but you also see that he's driven. You see that he can be cruel, but he keeps his word. So, like, when he realizes that Aang must be in the water, or in the Southern Water Tribe village, he goes and says, like, and he's like, one of you better show me the Avatar. Where is he hiding? Where is he hiding? Where is he hiding? And Aang, like comes out and is, like, ready to fight.
Mm-hmm.
And Zuko says, if you come with me now, I won't hurt anyone. And Aang goes, and he didn't hurt anyone.
Right.
Like, he actually was true to his word and didn't do anything. Whereas, like, truly evil characters in this series, like Zhao... mm-hmm. will make a promise and go, JK, and then just do the thing that he said he was going to do. He wasn't going to do. So you do see, like, things like that. And it's good to see Zuko like that because you kind of like him. You like him.
You see he is a gray area. I think it's interesting that you bring up Zhao because they are both on the same side, but they're totally different products of their environment. Yes. And it kind of gets into who they are as people versus what they were told to believe. Because, yeah, Zhao is a terrible person.
Yeah. So, like, Zhao is an admiral in the Fire mm-hmm. Nation army. And his way of going about things is, like, just through sheer force. He has no skill. He has no...
He is the embodiment of kill it with fire.
And there's literally a whole episode where Aang is... That's in season one, right? Where he finds the firebending master? Yes. He thinks he's about to find... Aang thinks he's about to find a firebending master to teach him. Mm-hmm. But the master's like, hell no, I'm not teaching you.
Yeah.
Like, this is the last element you need to learn, not the first. And the teacher keeps going on and on about having a student who never learned discipline, never learned control, never learned mm-hmm. how to, like, master his emotions... to see past his rage, basically. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the episode, you realize that this student that the master's been talking about this entire time, who sounds like a whiny crybaby, who ironically sounds like a snowflake, mm-hmm. is Zhao. And Aang is able to use that against him because Zhao can't, like, see the clear picture here. And at the end of the fight, Zhao ends up, like, torching all of his boats.
Yep.
Because he's an idiot. Yeah. And can't see past his anger and is, like, posturing strength and, mm-hmm. I'm better than you, even though you're the Avatar, like, kind mm-hmm. of thing. But yeah, it's one of those things where you can see the very difference in these two characters because Zuko, while kind of an emotionally angsty human being...
Always.
Fights very powerfully and very rigidly and but like mm-hmm. not rigid, that's not the word I want, with control. He's very mm-hmm. in control of what he's doing and it would never make such a sloppy mistake.
Not sloppy is a very good way of describing Zuko.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
because he's definitely a mess but he's not sloppy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And again, I think it's also the influence of you see the ways, when you get into his backstory and you see the ways that his family was terrible, and then you see the guidance Uncle Iroh provides to him. One of the best relationships of just what family is and means and how much they care for each other. And you even see it with Sokka, Katara's older brother. Mm-hmm. Just the ways that family, they're found family, the three of them, but also the way Sokka looks out specifically for his sister.
Yeah, and speaking of Sokka and respecting his sister, and can we get into how this show went, you better drink some respect women juice.
Episode 4?
I think so.
Yeah, it was, like, right off the bat. Like, if Katara wasn't enough, let's just reiterate the fact.
Yeah, so... Literally in episode 4, we meet the incredible, beautiful, I want to be one of them, also I want to, like, date them, Kyoshi warriors. Oh my god. Let me tell you, I love this episode.
It's one of their best episodes because it introduces some of the best characters. But I was going to say, though, the amount of people who've, after, like, since and I've talked to, have just, like, you realize all the Kyoshi warriors were lesbians. And I'm just like...
There was one canon. Straight, and it was Suki, and that is the only straight I will allow.
She might not even be straight. Who knows? I've seen a lot of headcanoning. But, like, it's just accepted among the fandom that the Kyoshi warriors are gay. Yeah. Because Avatar Kyoshi was clearly very gay.
Yes. Lesbian army right there. But, like, regardless, like, first of all, the show starts with Katara calling Sokka sexist. Second, in episode 4, the episode starts with Sokka being like, women are just, like, better at that stuff. Like, sewing domestic pants stuff. And, like, domestic mm-hmm. skills, basically. Men are good at hunting and fishing and blah, 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 blah. And women are better at cooking and, like, sewing and meh, meh, meh. And it's like, ugh. Like, now watching that, I hate that. And I'm sure, like, when I watched as a kid, I hated that too, because I was definitely that kid in the back, like, in the class being, like, angry when the kids laughed when the teacher was like, and in colonial times, women were the head of the house. And, like, the boys would laugh, and I would be like, are you kidding me? Listen, I've always been an angry little feminist. But anyway, then they arrive on Kyoshi Island, immediately get ambushed, and Sokka's like, where are the men who attacked us? And then Suki is like, there were no men. It was us.
Yep.
Love a queen. And then, like, the entire episode is just Sokka's journey into realizing what a sexist ass he was being.
Yeah, and he genuinely does learn from it. He stops at episode 4.
Yeah, it doesn't stop. He continues to respect the women in his life, and he doesn't really ever make a comment like that again.
Which is nice. Again, I'm glad they got that out of the way. Like, if they were going to do that, they got it out of the way super fast. And also, looking back on it now, as I've gotten to know the queer community and, like, figuring out masculinity and femininity and stuff, this episode does a really good job playing with that, too. Because and the costume design is very interesting on its own. But at one point, Sokka, when he's apologizing to Suki, and he's just like, I'm sorry, I didn't. Basically, I don't remember what he says, but he's like,
he says,
yes, thank you.
I treated you like a girl when I should have treated you like a warrior. And then Suki says, I am a warrior, but I'm also a girl, and then kisses him on the cheek.
Yes. And it's just that duality of just, like, every time you see a really, like, strong, badass woman, and this is something I was pointed out to me that I've thought of since, it's always a super masculine version, and so I appreciate that Suki is really pretty. She has a higher voice. Whenever she's not dressed as a warrior, she's wearing more feminine things, and it's just like, you can be both. Femininity is also strong. And I was like, wow, Avatar did that for a whole generation.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in the first season, the vision of powerful women you see are, like, feminine. We kind of move away from that a little bit in season two, but we're going to talk about that when we get to season two, I'm sure, so.
Yeah.
Then, but, like, the thing is that the show didn't just do a one-off sexism episode. They bring it up again at the end of the season.
Yes.
And this was another thing that I was talking to, like, my nephew about, because we were watching the season finale together, and we were, or not, it wasn't the finale, it was, like, the episode right before the two-part finale.
Right.
Where they're finally at the Water Tribe, Aang and Katara can finally find a waterbending teacher to teach them how to, like, actually be waterbenders and fight, and it's great, but the waterbending teacher is a jerk, and won't teach Katara, because the culture of the Northern Water Tribe is to teach women how to heal, and to teach men how to fight.
Which, it's interesting, because in the Kyoshi Warrior, it's more of Sokka's internalized, what he's learned, and, like, how he perceives women, versus the Northern, when you get to that episode, it's, this is a cultural sexism.
Yeah.
This is a tradition.
And it's not that Katara doesn't want to learn how to heal, but it's also practical to learn how to fight if she's traveling with the Avatar.
She's also a fighter. She is she contains multitudes.
Yes, she does.
She is a damn good fighter.
But, like, I was talking to my nephew about this, and I was like, yeah, like, he's just a jerk and won't teach her how to fight because she's a girl. And he made some kind of comment about, so he's a bad guy. I was like, he's not a bad guy. But he's being kind of mean because he won't let Katara learn how to fight just because she's a girl. And it was just kind of funny how, like, to him, I was like, oh, bad guy, immediately bad.
Right, right.
But, okay, I actually want to have this conversation. So I was on Reddit a few months ago, and someone brought up, like, the fight between Katara and whatever the guy's name is. I don't remember. Paku, Master Paku.
Yes, good call.
And how, clearly, like, Katara was winning that fight. And I was like, no, she wasn't, though. Like, Katara was holding her own in that fight, but she wasn't winning, and Master Paku was kind of just, like, playing with her.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate, because that is also an accurate reflection of their skills. Like, when we meet Katara, she can barely get, like, control some water. And we see her advance and things throughout the season, but it makes sense that, like, she's not going to beat the master. She also knows she's not going to beat the master. And it makes sense that the master is, you know, going easy on her and playing with her, as insulting as that is.
So I think what made me angry about this specific Reddit thread was that people were getting, like, mad that people were saying Katara never would have been able to, like, take on a master and win. And that it was almost like doing the opposite of what it should have been doing, is that people were being like, she's a woman, so of course she would have won that. And I was like, wait, what? I was like, did you watch a different show from me? Because in season one, she is not a waterbending master.
Yeah.
Like, she cannot waterbend to the level of a master. She has skill, like, inherent skill and drive to learn and be good. And that's why she is able to fight the way she does in that last scene.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that she wins that fight. Like, Paku literally puts her in a ice cage after that. And she can't get out.
Yeah. She doesn't lose that fight. This is going to sound very strange. But that... the core of that fight is he refuses to teach her because she's a girl. But the reason she lost that fight isn't because she's a girl. She lost that fight because she is a student and he is a master.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I've always kind of hated why he changes his mind.
Why does he change his mind?
He changes his mind because her necklace falls off and it's like, I gave this to the love of my life and she left me. And because, like, Katara is the love of his life's granddaughter, he's like, well, I guess I could teach you.
Oh, I read it as he changed his mind because the grandmother, though, his betrothed, left because the traditions in the North weren't good. So he's that finally was what put it together of just, like, maybe traditions need to change.
Maybe, but I still hate it.
Yeah.
It was so, like, I don't know. I guess it's a small moment, and I guess you couldn't have them fighting about this for, like, longer than an episode, and it had to be wrapped up quickly. Mm-hmm. But for me, I was just like, why couldn't he have just been impressed with how she fought and, like, held her own and was like, maybe this is, like, something.
Right.
Like, why couldn't it have been wrapped up with her actually proving her worth as a fighter and not like, you're my betrothed's who left me at the altar, basically, granddaughter, you know?
Yeah. I also, this is a really small detail, but do you remember first lesson in inequality? Do you remember being mad when you saw the Northern Water Tribe versus the Southern Water Tribe? And I was like, wait a minute. I am very angry at just how beautiful the North is. And then you remember the South when it's like a dozen igloo.
I don't particularly remember being angry about that. But I think it's a nice touch on the show because the Fire Nation killed all of the waterbenders in the Southern Fighters. Water Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly they weren't really able to build because they didn't have waterbenders to help build.
Yeah, and the idea is the North, which is unconquered, fortified, so that also meant they're not helping their Southern brethren. Yeah. Which they kind of address at the end, so that's why I'll keep this short of just like, and we should go and help our friend, like our family in the South. And I was like, yes, you should.
Yeah, because Paku finally is like, okay, I'm gonna find her. Like, she's there, so I'm gonna find her. And also, like, we should probably help them.
I know. Anyways,
again, I think Paku's driving force is not actually, like, selflessness. It's it's the grandma.
Yeah.
Which I don't like. Like, Sokka learned his lesson. Paku did not.
I know. Yeah.
But since we're here in the Northern Water Tribe, let's talk about Yue.
We just jumped to the end.
I mean, we're already at the end.
I know.
So let's talk about Yue and that whole situation and how incredible it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just love seeing Sokka, like, on his game. I just think it's so funny.
The actor and the writing is just so good because when you're a kid, you're just like, oh, haha, Sokka's a clown. But when you're in high school, you're just like, yes, this is every, like, 15, 16-year-old boy trying to date a girl. Like,
exactly.
This is exactly how it goes.
And so, like, shock, awe, we realize that Sokka's been, like, lusting after the princess. Like, she is a princess of the Northern Water Tribe. Like, there is no other princess.
Yeah, only child.
And she's got this, like, beautiful white hair,
And she also has a betrothal necklace, so nothing can go nowhere with these two. Which is so, like, star-crossed lovers and awesome.
But also, before I get to Yue, I know I was like, let's get to Yue. I am now thinking about Sokka more. Sorry. I loved seeing Sokka in a situation where he was being competent, though. Where, like, he signed up to help fight, and the leader of the water tribe was like, yeah, let's listen to Sokka because he knows where it's at. Like he has right. all the information. He is a warrior. Like, let's do this.
But to tie Yue and Sokka, like, the threads together, so Yue's betrothed is a young teen punk who is the worst. He is the absolute worst. And it's kind of, you see, like, this is what Sokka could have become. Yeah. And he's so belittling to Sokka because big city boy, country bumpkin kind of dynamic. But Sokka is so smart.
He's also very humble. Like... Mm-hmm. Sokka knows the information, and then the fiancé or whatever is like, let's go get General Zhu. And it's like, no, it's not Zhu, it's Zhao.
Right? And he has all the wrong information.
I was like, what? Sokka's literally telling you his name. Mm-hmm. Get it right. Also, stop wearing that dumb Fire Nation uniform that is 30 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, this stuff doesn't look like that no more. Like, calm down. And he just was so cocky. Mm-hmm. It literally kind of... Now that you mention it, yeah, it is, like, kind of Sokka from the beginning of the season. And you kind of are very genuinely seeing, like, oh, God, that was Sokka. And now this is Sokka. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why Yue is more attracted to Sokka. Because, one, he's just a better person. Two, he actually cares about her and not her status.
But, like, the reason why Yue is so significant, as most of you know, is that she becomes the moon spirit. Because... Mm-hmm. Zhao, once again, is an ass and thinks it's smart to kill a spirit.
Yep.
Not even a spirit, the moon spirit. And literally everyone around him is going, this is a bad idea. Stop it. And Iroh is, this is like kind of the beginning of seeing Iroh being a good guy too. Because Iroh's going, like, Zhao, stop that. Like, you have to maintain we have to, like, draw a line somewhere. And if we kill the moon spirit, that's not just going to affect the water nation. It's going to affect all of us. Like, you can't just kill the moon.
Yeah, Iroh is one of the most respectful figures in the entire series. Not just of other people and life, but of just the world and the relation that these people have with the spirit realm and the spirit world. And you see Zhao just throw that out the window.
Yeah, Iroh is one of the only characters that we see who can see spirits. Because there's an episode where Aang is, like, riding Roku's dragon in the spirit world. And we see that Iroh sees that. So he's one of the only characters that we know has some sort of access to the spirit world. So he knows the consequences of this action. I just really like... seeing that, and it's not the first time we see Iroh being, like, a good guy, but it's one of those things where you're like, oh, wow, like, he's actually, like, probably not with this plan, you know, like, to conquer the world.
Yeah, it's the first hint that we get of Iroh's kind of done with the Fire Nation, even though he is Fire Nation royalty. By being Zuko's uncle, that means he is the brother of the Fire Lord, and through this, we see him, like, finally just like, oh, Iroh doesn't agree with his nation.
And this entire time, Zuko has been like, Zhao like pulled the whole thing and he tried to kill Zuko basically. And so Zuko has like infiltrated the Water Nation on his own. And he's slick like that. We love a skilled guy.
He is also very smart.
Yeah. And he genuinely manages to steal Aang away while he's in the spirit world trying to find where the moon spirit is, which was right in front of him. The entire time right in front of him.
The symbolism was so strong in the fish. I'm just like, oh, as a 10-year-old, I was like, found it. Anyways.
Yep.
Plot had to happen, you know, things had to happen.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And then, but like, Aang is gone. Zuko is gone. Katara tries her best. But once the moon is down...
She holds her own yet again.
I just really like the symmetry of that scene where she says, like, or where Zuko says, you rise with the moon,
I rise with the sun.
Like, and people wonder why Zuko Katara shippers.
Like, Zutara, it exists. I'm sorry.
That line alone fed us for years.
We'll get into that later.
A later discussion.
Yeah, so Zhao kills the water spirit. And then Iroh has this moment with Yue and is like, you've been touched by the moon spirit. Like, you can mm-hmm. give your life for the moon spirit. And this absolute queen, because she has ascended, she is now a queen, she's no longer a princess, sacrifices her life to become the moon spirit.
But also, one of my favorite things about, you know, this even struck me the first time I watched it, and every time I've watched it since, the artistic decision to go to black and white the second the moon is killed, and only Yue's eyes are in color, in blue. Chef's kiss. What a choice. I absolutely loved that.
Yeah. James even asked me about that when we were watching. He was like, why is everything dark now? And I said, because the moon is gone. And he was like, oh.
So many choices, because obviously the elements and the nations all are very, like, color-based and the way that it plays with each other. And it's just a lot of very good animation style choices.
Super color-coded, this show. Also, can we talk about Aang's no-killing rule? And then he definitely just killed all of those people in this episode.
It's one of those shows where, like, when it comes down to the bad guys and an army, you don't think too hard about a body count, and you just see them, like, getting flung everywhere.
Yeah. I will say, however, when right after the moon spirit gets killed and Aang goes into the Avatar state, that moment where he just sinks into the pond and then just, like, becomes that giant fish monster is so cool. So cool.
Their exploration of the Avatar state in the first book is really interesting, because you know that it's a trigger, and it's one of the Aang's / the Avatar's its most powerful weapon, but when you see the way it hits Aang and the way he uses it, it's really fascinating. Comes from absolute peak emotional distress or anger, which you see in the first episode when he goes home. But I really liked the exploration of it throughout the series.
Yeah, I feel like this is the first time that Aang sort of goes into it willingly. Like, he doesn't... this is, like, kind of the first time he sort of controls it. After this, he still is kind of like, I can't really control it. But it's kind of the first time where he's the one kind of, like, willing the Avatar state to happen, you know?
Yeah. It's, I think, because it's so emotionally based for him, it's him using righteous anger for the first time.
Which is great. I just really like that. I just really... The visual of just him, like, going down is... And... Truly, when I watch this show, I think about how there's supposed to be a new live action series. We're not talking about the movie. Yeah. We're not going to talk about the I just mean, like, there's going to be a new live action series based off of Avatar.
I still scoff, but yes.
How can they manage to top the beauty and the, like, visuals of a cartoon when it comes to bending?
So I'm really sad that we're almost out of the episode, because I could go off for another half an hour, but they can't. I don't care how much. Netflix has so much money at their disposal, and this series is never going to meet the expectations and the art that was the animated series, because there are things you can do with animation, specifically with Asian-inspired animation, that they're not going to translate. They will never translate. And I don't care how good this live-action series is going to be, because at the end of the day, it will always be bad. It will never measure up. And I will stand by those words when this thing comes out. And it's just the audacity. audacity to think that they can do this live action. Everything about it, like you said earlier, Avatar Last Airbender is perfect, top, bottom. Why are you messing with it?
Yeah. And it's, like, as perfect as a television show can be. Definitely it has its moments where it's like, I don't really like this. But, like, it's a television show that went on for 3 seasons, and pretty much every single person you ever talk to who's watched the show goes, I love it.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the tea. Like, it's a good show. It's solid. The writing is solid. The acting is solid. The characters have growth, and you learn so much. What this show is trying to tell you, or trying to help you learn, is so complex that you don't even realize you've personally, I didn't even realize I internalized the lessons of Avatar until I was an adult and going, oh, wow, this is where that came from.
Yeah. I will quote to myself Avatar mentally without even realizing that's where it's coming from. This is a show that you really grow up with and you reflect back on just constantly because it's just such an influence. If you let it, it's such a major influence.
Yeah. It's just a very good show, and it's kind of hard... We kind of a little bit were alluding to it earlier. It's hard to talk about a show like this and not think about the state of affairs of the world at the moment.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people, because of the timing of when it dropped on Netflix in America, and then when the protests started recently a few days ago, a lot of people are just like, one person's like, you think you're Zuko, but you're not.
Yeah.
like, this show has a lot of relevancy to things happening right now in 2020, and this came out in 2005, because the things happening in 2005 are still happening.
But yeah, anyway, there's so much more we can say about this. There's so much
I didn't even get into its Asian influences, which are, by the way, respect. I've seen a lot of people go back and forth on, and even in anime communities, of where is Avatar in the appreciation spectrum, and it's one of, for my own opinion and most others, it is firmly on the appreciation side. It's like the appreciation goal.
No, everything about this show is so well thought out.
It's thought out and it's researched.
Yeah.
It's really well researched. All of the words and the names, they mean things. Like, they're not Asian gibberish. I can't remember all of the things, but one of the examples from book one is the big panda monster, Heibai. That's Chinese for black white. Like, that's not just, like, Asian sounds. Those are words.
Yeah, and every single bending style is based off of an actual martial art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a real actual martial art that you can learn. Like, it's not just, like, mm-hmm. fancy movement. Like, they didn't just pluck those movements out of thin air. No, this show had a team of martial artists that they would, like, film and record to be able to, like, transpose those things onto the animation.
Yeah.
So that everything looked and felt realistic.
Yeah, the costume designs for each nation, the thought and the history and the influence of each nation. Avatar has rights.
And, like, I can't believe this is a controversial statement. There are no white people in Avatar.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize people thought that.
As a white person, I can kind of see where it comes from because, like, it's kind of hard to look at Aang and not see him as white, for me. Is it
the lack of hair? At least.
He's just very pale and white looking. I don't know.
Mm.
He just seems white to me. But, like, knowing the, like, thought and effort and research that went into the show from the creators, it's clear after the fact, as, like, a privileged white person watching it, you know, that, like, they clearly didn't pull anything from Western ideology or Western anything. Nothing is Western about this show. Except that it was made in the West.
And again, you know, Asian Americans love to talk about the power of representation, but, like, and also as an anime fan, I remember watching Avatar when I was a kid and just being like, oh my god, I recognize everything. Everything about this feels familiar to me. And I wasn't raised by Asian people, but everything about the storytelling and the characters and the design just was so familiar to me.
Yeah,
that's book one. This is why we're doing it in seasons. Can you imagine if we did all three in 1 hour?
Not possible.
Can't do it.
Not possible. And we honestly might need a part four, just to, like, just in general, to keep going.
Like, you know what we didn't talk about?
This is what you needed to say. Okay. Anyway, watch Avatar. It's a really good show. We really, really love it. Obviously, in 2 weeks we're gonna do book two. So get ready. Next week, I don't even remember what our topic is going to be, but whatever. In 2 weeks, it's book two. We'll be with you till the end of the line. You can follow me on Twitter at TheSabrinaPet. You can follow Lily at Lily_Rugo. You can follow the podcast at EMFangirls. And check out our website, earthsmightiestfangirls.com. and send us an email. How much do you love Avatar? Like, do you think that we didn't talk about something? Like, we know that we didn't talk about it, but, like, we probably have thought it. Send us that email at emfangirls@gmail.com. And listen to us, rate us, review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all those lovely places.
Thank you to Dexter Britton for letting us use their song Wonderland, and thanks to us for editing and producing.